public funds, I felt a little resentful having to spend my own money on relatively minor bills, but ones that came in after I had been required to turn back the $5,000, which I saved from my budget to show that it could be done under budget. I would suggest that we should allow voluntary contributions of $50 in, but not in the candidate's name, to the campaign fund to match the political contribution that it's allowed at the state level. In fact, I don't really see why there should be any purpose to not limiting donations of any amount to the campaign finance fund as long as they're not linked in name to a particular candidate. We should all be supporting this system, and if we could help get more private funds rather than public funds, that I think would make it more acceptable to many more people. Mayor, is it okay if I keep going?
Please. Question.
Thank you.
Just for another minute.
Yeah, thank you.
So there currently is a limit? I didn't know that.
Well, there's you can't currently give at all, and the commission is suggesting $5. It takes a really long time to get any amount of money in $5 bills. You know, we didn't get my website up until the end of September last year because I was saving up for it to out of the funny because I of the funds because I chose not to use any in-kind donations. Carol warned me that I wasn't going to be able to read my notes, and I can't. I would also like to highlight and commend the relaxing of the rules to get rid of the one strike and you're out rule. The rules as I went through them was that if you made one single mistake in any one of your 1,000 signatures, you were completely disqualified from the whole system. And I lay awake at nights for days on that. So I want to thank them in particular for that. On credit cards, first of all, the new form requires the donor and the solicitor to sign at the same time, which would not be possible with online contributions. Second of all, you do require a signature on the form, and it's not clear how that would be. Third, I would be very nervous about credit card numbers and signatures both being posted online or being available in some public manner that they would leave the donors open to identity theft. And I do agree with the commission's point of view that having face-to-face discussion, especially with the new form, which requires that the people who are soliciting talk about the candidate, identify the candidate, the person who's donating acknowledges that they support that particular candidate, which is different. And on cars, yeah, I'm nearly done. I just wanted to comment on the car thing. I couldn't have managed without a car. Some of the days of campaigning, I did 6 different events that I was barely able to get from one to another. And in the current campaign financing rules, you're allowed to declare the value of miles, either as an in-kind donation and you need to get reimbursed for it. So why you would make it more difficult for campaign finance candidates to be able to get from event to event, I can't fathom. I mean, I do understand that you shouldn't be able to buy a car with the proceeds and then, you know, continue to use it afterwards, maybe that. I didn't employ anybody in my campaign. I didn't pay any money to anybody who collected donations for me, and I didn't employ any family members. And I agree that it would be helpful if there were some kind of restrictions. My preference would be that if you help gather the money and act as a solicitor, that you then are not employable in the campaign, and it would seem like that would work. Thank you.
My name is Bill Harris. I live in Northwest Portland. I want to speak about it this issue in a general way and very briefly. I am grateful to the council for the courage you had to legislate this change, and also for your wisdom in establishing systems that were very likely to make it work. Those systems have been talked about enough today to convince me that they are in place, and I'm thrilled. The public ownership of elections is a major step toward the sustainable community we all seek, it seems to me, for 2 prominent reasons. One, it encourages a movement away from our present process of making public decisions in line with the desires of moneyed individuals and entities. Second, it promotes citizenship, encouraging people to be more aware of the common good, become devoted to the common good, and enthusiasm in participating in public affairs. I think we owe ourselves every possible tool to move toward the sustainable state which we so much obviously need, and this is one of those tools. Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
And our third testifier is Janice Thompson.
Thanks for being here. When you speak, please state your name for the record. You have 3 minutes.
Janice Thompson with the Money and Politics Research Action Project. Now, starting next week, we're going to have a new name. We're going to be Democracy Reform Oregon, less of a mouthful. So I also want to thank the commission for its hard work. I think one indication of the value of this reform overall is documented in a report by the Center for Governmental Studies. And I want to highlight that one of its findings is the need to kind of take a long view in the fact that these reform options need to be given time to work to demonstrate their full potential. And I think we're seeing that in the commission's recommendations, and the commission will come again. The testimony, you've got two things. One is just a general analysis that we did, and then the testimony is highlighted with the date at the top. I am going to run out of time, which is partly why I kind of wrote it down. So just to touch on the two things, I will let you just kind of focus on reading on your own. There's a few just recommend clarifications to some of the recommendations I want to suggest, and also want to highlight some recommendations for that I would urge you to ask the commission to kind of take up next. One of them is a particular topic about independent expenditures. I think the other questions that came up about independent expenditures could be factored into those conversations. But I have one significant amendment to suggest, and also one idea and for an action that you could take to kind of request more information, to kind of, you know, shed more light on this whole credit card issue. But the significant recommendation relates to number 11, which is setting up the mandatory early turn-in, needing to have at least 30%. This, I think, should be changed to an optional early turn-in deadline. I think it just kind of, you know, flies in the face of political realities, you know, given that folks sometimes take a while, particularly incumbents. And it really forces a challenger to not to make a decision to participate or to run, not really kind of, you know, based on the assessment of the candidate pool, but like, oh, this little arbitrary December 1 deadline, you know, how soon do I have to be geared up to meet that? And I'm particularly concerned that it will actually discourage incumbents from opting into the system. And I think we want to, if anything, do the exact opposite. I think part of the motivation is to help the auditor's office manage its workload. I think that two things. One is I don't think it helps the workload enough to make a difference. And then in general, I think the balancing act between we're trying to reach between administrative burden and, you know, effective running of the system. This recommendation, as it's written, doesn't meet the mark. Can I go on or to talk about
which
the credit?
What do you have?
Just I want to touch base with an idea to get a little bit more information to on the whole credit card issue.
Okay.
The discussion between Commissioners Leonard and Adams, I think, really exemplifies, like, you know, the tussle in people's minds about this credit cards or not credit card. I actually am more in Commissioner Leonard's camp with the
thank you so much. And, you know how much that means to me.
I think it's instructive to take a look at the presidential, and I think that's why the commission, I think, is really clearly signaling that this is not like a recommendation that they're seeing as being cast in stone. But that's politics at one scale, and I think we're talking about politics at another scale. And so that's why I think, you know, caution in this area makes sense. But one idea that did come up was the notion of allowing a certain percentage of the qualifying contributions to come in the form of a credit card payment. And in that way, kind of have that be an option for those folks who that's kind of how they run their life. They don't have checkbooks anymore. They don't carry cash. But to have it be capped so that it can't be just kind of a runaway internet, you know, web-based campaign. So there was a lot of discussion about that, and very clearly that would increase the administrative complexity. And it may well be that in this case, you know, the commission's recommendation just for at least now stick with not allowing credit card contributions, you know, may reflect, you know, the right balance in that sweet spot you're trying to find between good public policy and appropriate level of administrative burden. But one idea is to request a little bit more information from the auditor's office about how hard that would be to kind of, you know, set up a mechanism of allowing it, but putting some level of cap on it. But then this is on page 3. I kind of map out if it's indeed an administrative burden, there's some kind of pros and cons. And with that, I'll let you read the rest.
So I guess, just to ask you a question, I guess I didn't realize this earlier when the commission was up here, but it says there's a mandatory candidacy declaration by incumbents by a certain date?
No.
There's not in the recommendations?
No.
Okay, because you say the question whether it's politically or legally feasible.
Right.
So it's not in the commission report?
No, it's not.
Okay.
So in other words, one way to make the mandate, you know, if you're going to have a mandatory December 1st, you have to have opted in, you have to have at least 30%. Another way to get around that, if part of the reason that's troublesome, is because it could force somebody to make some decisions before incumbents and other folks have, like, you know, opted into the system. One idea could be, well, let's somehow make it, you know, like, Commissioner Leonard, you know, by X amount of time, you have to declare one way or another. Well, that's just not, again, physically or politically feasible or probably legal. So given that that's not the case, I just think it's inappropriate to have this mandatory 30% early timeline. And it's an example of not hitting the right balance between kind of workload concerns and good public policy.
Janice, would it make sense to have a mandatory 30% turn-in that you just have to turn in? When you get to 30%, you have to turn in so the auditor can do that early work and see what's happening or something? I'm working without thinking this through a ton, but I think that the argument of having people turn in a chunk sooner has some merit.
Right.
And I think the idea of kind of early warning systems on both sides has some merit. I tend to agree with you that the December 1st is just too arbitrary. I mean, the last thing you want is somebody out, say Ms. Fritz says she's not going to run if the incumbent runs, but she doesn't know and she starts qualifying and accepting $5 and then doesn't want to do it because the incumbent announces in November. I mean, that doesn't make sense. I see something to this 30% turn-in
right.
argument.
So in other words, whenever you start, when you hit 30% or your best faith, you know, effort,
yeah,
you're going to turn it in.
Right.
And I think in that situation, I think, one, that helps, you know, I can see pros and cons from a workload point of view. The pro is that it's going to stagger when it comes in. The con is you have no control over the exact timing when it could come in. So then the other question that needs to be addressed, and this was also discussed, and it's something that's done in Arizona, is, okay, you give it your best shot and you turn in 30%, and what if you don't quite hit the mark? What happens then? And I think in that case, because I think there is a concern about not setting up a system that just lets people kind of take bite after bite of an apple, if, you know, they keep just turning in really sloppy work. You don't want to let them
right.
keep trying it. So I think there's two ways to get at that. One is just to allow one early turn-in and not repeated early turn-ins. But the other is, say, you know, I've been out there and I've collected what I calculate is 30%. You know, and I would probably want to turn in a little bit more to try to, is that I think the make or break decision would be, I could go forward if I, if like 90%, that's the figure in Arizona, where they allow.
This needs some more work. This,
yeah. But basically, because if somebody turns in 30% and it's like only 50% are valid, I would say you don't want to let them keep going. But at the same time, if they're about 30%, you know, they gave it their best shot and they're like, you know, 90% off, then I think they are, you know, deserve to kind of. So that's the kind of, that it's another approach that was discussed. And I think it's a little better way to handle this.
Okay. That's
good. Thank you. Is that it?
That's it.
Need a motion to accept the report.
So moved.
Second.
Please call the vote.
Adams.
Again, thank you for all your work. Look forward to getting the actual written amendments back to us and studying it further. I want to thank you, Commissioner Stinn, for your leadership on this and the team that worked on it. Aye.
These are good changes, and I will support them. But I continue to believe that the goal of this effort is one that I support, which is to try to level the playing field for not only just challengers to incumbents, but as we heard here, for those who might want to run for a vacant seat. And with all that I've read and discussed and been involved with this issue since it started 2 years ago, I'm just still not there. I don't think it does that. What I think does do that is actually something, ironically, we've had an opportunity to do here real recently, is to create districts in the city where an individual could literally, with the motivation, knock on every door in a council district and with a small amount of money, literally contact every voter. I found it interesting in the report, when I read the report, that they alluded to the fact that on the county commission, there have been significantly more women serving than on the city council. And they went on and attributed that to, or some of the concerns that those incumbent commissioners had that were women, to not being able to break into raising the money as being an issue, and just completely ignored the fact that the county commission has districts, and which I just am persuaded is how we get to the place where we get representation from the minority community, representation from women, but more importantly to me, to be quite honest, representation of working class people's values. That is how we're going to actually do it. And I'm sad that we missed an opportunity here recently to actually, and this is not new to me, that I actually worked with the former late state Senator Bill McCoy to do just this in 1996. We actually wrote an initiative, and he died during the initiative campaign to create districts in Portland, and that stopped the effort. But I continue to be convinced that when we are truly, as a city, serious about breaking down some of the traditional barriers that allow average people to run for the council, we will create districts. But I will support this report, and when it comes, when the language comes to council, aye.
Saul Smith.
Well, I support the changes in this report. However, I will be looking for changes, additional changes. I want to see us incorporate the best practices regarding independent expenditures that Maine and Arizona have modeled. And I also want to see that explore the option of the auditor being a co-signer of the qualifying candidate accounts in order to quickly recover any funds in the event of abuse or fraud. So those will be two issues that I will be pursuing with the auditor, the commission, and ultimately with the council. I do think that the independent expenditure loophole really applies to non-participating candidates. They are the ones who are effectively kneecapped in this situation, and I do think there's probably a slight bias of the commission and of the people who support voter-owned elections to want to make everybody run under the voter-owned election system. And simply, you know, this is a society that is diverse. People have their rights, and, you know, the playing field has to be leveled, and it has to tolerate the rights of those of us who will not participate in the publicly funded, because we have, you know, at least for myself, I have an ethical reason about not using taxpayer dollars. So that has to be taken care of. Arizona and Maine, the leaders in this field, have both addressed it. So I'll be looking for some changes to incorporate that. Aye.
Dan.
I'm open on some of Commissioner Saltzman's points, and I want to thank the commission. I think you've done really great work. I guess I'm the only candidate that's ever run under both systems and raised lots of money from very few donors under the old system, and raised, I think I had 1,400 contributors last time around, which even against my first race, which was very grassroots oriented, was about 50% more. And so I think that I do agree completely with Dan that we should have people able to run both ways. I think, though, that this will give, has already really changed the way races are looked at. I won't share everybody because they may be on the ballot together, but I have the good fortune of being overwhelmed with potential terrific candidates that are all considering running that I don't think would not have considered it without this system in place. And there were definitely some there were some errors. There was also some fraud, and I think people were punished for those. It's been pretty severe punishment. And it's taken a little while. I think what the Citizens Commission is doing is trying to make this system much stronger. And I would say to people who say, gosh, you didn't get everything right this first time, it's really taken 200 years to get our democracy to this disgraceful position it's in of money dominating everything. And if you look at national politics, all we hear about is, okay, Obama raised more than Clinton, so therefore he's the leader. I mean, that's the entire discourse. And I think that we are not going to re-engage the average citizen until we take away what they know to be true, which is that the process is dominated by money. It's not that people are cynical, so the process is dominated by money. They're cynical because they rightfully understand the kind of inordinate influence that big money has on politics. And I'd be the first to say I don't think it's the same kind of heavy foot coming down in these chambers. There's certainly – I've never seen any indication that my colleagues have had a vote bought or anything like that, but it's a totally different kind of experience. And like global warming and some other issues that are huge in scope, you can only change them if you start locally and prove that different systems are possible. The chance to really take on, I think, the crippling issue of money in politics is not going to come from Washington, D.C. So it is coming from Portland, Oregon, and we copied Maine and Arizona. So there is a movement afoot to say there's a better way to do things. And it is a voluntary way, and you can run both ways, and I actually think that's the right way to go about it. And I think you guys have really made this much better with your work. It's that kind of somewhat arduous citizen work that Portland is known for that I think is recognized in this document. And I think we have a couple more things to debate. The December 1st issue to me doesn't seem like it's quite right, but I think we can get through those things, and I really appreciate everybody's hard work, and thank you. I vote aye.
Honor.
I appreciate the leadership, Commissioner Stinn and Auditor Blackburn, in supporting this and bringing it forward, and all the good folks in the community who helped us create it, and particularly to the commission. I really appreciate your insight. And also, there were several good issues raised today by those folks who testified. And so I'm accepting the report, but I think that there's some work that needs to be done on it, and be glad to assist the commission and this council in doing that. I vote aye. We adjourn until next week.
Did you go take some more pills or something?
Are you ready for me to come up?
Yes.
Come on up.